made me desperate was when the doctor, when I told him I'm not doing these drugs anymore, the doctor said, well, then go get your house in order. You're going to be crippled for the rest of your life. You're not going to be able to take care of your family. You're going to have to get, here's information on getting on disability and all this kind of stuff. And at that time, Beverly, I had a 6,000 square foot home, sports cars. We went on vacations, you know, all around the world. Like, we were living this huge lifestyle.
Yeah.
When this happened, and to tell me that I'm not going to be able to take care of my family anymore, I had two small kids at the time, you're going to go on disability and collect Social Security, my brain said, no way.
The good life is one inspired by love and guided by knowledge. You'll find both love and knowledge here on The Misdiagnosed Life. Here is your host, Beverly Butler.
As reported by Forbes, 52.3% of people are unhappy at work. And this is according to a new report by the Conference Board, which is a New York-based nonprofit research group. And where there's unhappiness, there's usually stress. And it's common knowledge today that, you know, everybody knows that stress can not only make you sick, but worsen any illness or health condition that you already have. And no one knows this better than Joy Smith. Now, Joy was, and I'm going to say this word, miraculously healed from a debilitating disease, or seemingly so, when he simply reduced the stress in his life by changing jobs. Now, I have talked, for those regular listeners, you know I've talked about stress a good bit on this show, and I try to address it from different angles. And we talk about it, and we come up with, you know, we different people have different solutions and different things that we can do to help reduce the stress, but I've never talked about this in detail like we're going to today. So I'm really excited to have Joy on the show. Joy Smith is an internet marketing coach, and he helps people achieve personal effectiveness and business success. He's also a drummer, a father, and a husband. Now, again, like I said, he was seemingly miraculously healed from multiple sclerosis, which is a very debilitating and a very serious illness. But he got better when he started doing what he loved. Now, does this say anything? I think it says a lot. And when I read his story on Facebook, I was so inspired by his story, I wanted to bring him on. Now, I do want to say a little health disclaimer here. The information that we're talking about is for educational purposes only. If you're sick, you go to your doctor, and it's not meant to be taken as medical advice. Joey, I'm really excited to have you on the show, and I'm so thankful that you're better. And I'm so thankful that you have such an amazing story, because it has been so inspiring to me, and it's been so inspiring to so many people, to everybody that's heard it, because I read a lot of those Facebook comments, and people were just blown away. And I love inspiring stories, and I think it just helps us all, whether it applies to us or not, but I think this story does apply to everybody, whether you're sick or not. And it just tells us how important it is to do what we love, to do what we're passionate about, to do what, because I think when we do what we love and what we're passionate about, that's what we came here to do. And I just want to start by I just want you to tell us what happened the day you started feeling better and you started putting two and two together and you realized that your unhappiness in your job was causing your symptoms. But first tell us, now it was multiple sclerosis, right? You were officially diagnosed with multiple sclerosis.
Yes, absolutely. And thanks for that introduction. In 2001, I've been a technology consultant since 1994. So I've been in the internet marketing world, or the internet world, for a long time now. It's over 20 some odd years. But in 2001, I was officially diagnosed on Christmas Eve. Amazingly, on Christmas Eve, with multiple sclerosis. But my spinal cord, my brain was covered in lesions and active scar tissue and inflammation so bad that I couldn't walk, couldn't get out of bed. I couldn't even think or reason, which was really weird and scary, because I couldn't even add 2 + 2. I knew that I should be able to add it, but I couldn't add it. So having this kind of weird experience and not being able to walk, I had no idea what was going on. And I had MRIs, and they officially diagnosed me in 2001 with multiple sclerosis.
Okay. Now, did this come on you all of a sudden or gradually? Did you just gradually start going downhill, or how did it?
Interestingly enough, I started getting something called optic neuritis, and those with multiple sclerosis know exactly what that is, because that's usually kind of a first telltale symptom. Now, because it's hard to diagnose an incurable disease like multiple sclerosis, there's a lot of symptoms and things that's associated with all kinds of things that you're very familiar with, from Lyme's disease and various other things. So I didn't get the official diagnosis until it came on all of a sudden, meaning I woke up and my body was in what they call an exacerbation or an attack. So I had this major attack right around Christmas time in 2001. I did have optic neuritis in my right eye starting around 1998 or 99.
Okay. And did that affect your eyesight? What did that do?
Yeah, it affected my eyesight, my right eye. I couldn't see very well out of my right eye, but it would come and go. Because MS, it has these flare-ups, and you know, it goes away and comes back and goes away and comes back, kind of like going in remission and that kind of thing. So it came and go, you know, went, and I thought that it was related, because I'm a computer person, a technologist, and I thought it was because I was staring at computer monitor screens and writing code and different things like that. So I thought that that's what it was associated with, until I had this attack in 2001.
So you for sure were very, very sick, and you were diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. So now fast forward, we'll come back and fill in some of the blanks, but let's fast forward to the day that you realized you're better, and maybe it's in remission at the very least, and maybe, well, at the best. But what happened? What was the day? What happened when you realized that you're better? You
know? Yeah, that's a great question. And it wasn't overnight, but you know how they say that it was an 8-year overnight success story.
Right.
So it wasn't quite overnight, but it started with when I was first diagnosed, and of course I couldn't walk and I couldn't think and all these crazy things were happening. And of course I was scared. Like, I had no idea what was going on until they diagnosed me. They, of course, like any inflammation, they gave me steroids. They got me a little bit back to normal, not totally back to normal. And then they put me on an MS drug at the time. And I'm not sure if they still prescribe it. I know there's new stuff that's out there, and they're always coming up with stuff called Copaxone. And this drug, it was an injectable drug that they gave me. And it had, just like most pharmaceutical drugs, again, I'm not a doctor, so whoever listened to this, but most pharmaceutical drugs have these crazy warnings, like, you know, there's a chance of death, and there's a chance of this and a chance of that. Well, this particular drug had a chance of death associated with it. And it was an allergic reaction that could possibly happen. And of course, they said it was like 1 out of 150,000 people that could be affected by this. And I would say the 100th day, it was an injectable drug. I had to inject it into the fat areas of my body, from my stomach to my legs and things like that. And on the 100th day, I had an allergic reaction, the allergic reaction that was supposed to kill me. And of course, you're hearing my voice, so it didn't, right?
Thankfully.
Lucky for me. Yeah, thankfully, right? The reason why it killed most people when you get this reaction is because it freezes up your muscles. And that means all muscles. Of course, your heart is a muscle, so generally it would freeze up people's hearts. Well, for me, it froze up all my muscles, but the only muscle that wasn't affected was my heart. So
it just wasn't your time.
It just wasn't my time. No, maybe I'm here to tell this story. So my heart, it didn't freeze up my heart, but the pain and the fear and this experience, it was the most excruciating, painful experience that you could possibly imagine when I took this drug. After they took me to the emergency room and they kind of revived me, I don't know how they did it or what their methods were, but they got me back to normal. And I went back to the doctor, and he said, well, now that you've had this reaction, you should keep going with the drug, meaning you're probably immune to it now.
I'm just laughing, and I'm like, are you kidding?
That was my initial reaction. I was, are you serious? And he's like, yeah. He's like, probably it'll work, because it was working, and that it wasn't, it was allowing me to remain in remission while I was on it. So that part of it was working. It was just this allergic reaction thing that almost killed me. So he said, yeah, so keep going with it. It'll probably be fine now. So I trusted the doctor, of course, and I kept using it. And the thing was, is every time I injected it, I had this anticipation because I remembered what that felt like. It felt horrible. And it lasted about 15 minutes of this excruciating pain. 10 days into my starting it back over again and doing it again, 10 days, I had the reaction again. Except this time, the pain and the reaction lasted an hour instead of 15 minutes. Oh, my heart kept beating again, as if my heart was immune to this. My heart kept beating again, although I wanted to die. I even cried out, please kill me. You know, God, kill me now. That's how bad it felt. So after I went back to the emergency room again, and they fixed me back up, and now I went back to the doctor again and said, hey, this happened two times in a row. I survived, thankfully. Now what do I do? And he said, well, we have this other MS drug, but you have to come in and get liver tests because it could cause leukemia and these liver disease and all this kind of stuff. And I'm thinking, I'm the guy who actually gets the bad stuff. I don't want that. So I said, I'm going to take it on my own. I'm going to no to these drugs because I'm afraid of these adverse reactions. I cheated death twice. I don't want to cheat it again. So I'm going to go figure it out on my own. And they're like, good luck. You know, you're not going to figure it out. It's incurable. Good luck.
Yeah.
And
well, so nobody could blame you. Nobody could blame you for wanting to do that.
I know. Right. And actually the nurse practitioner was like, keep me posted. Like, you know, they're like, forget what the doctor said. Keep me posted. Meaning okay. If you find something, you know, tell me. Like she gave me her email and she's like, keep me posted with your findings. Cause you know, she really wanted to see what I came up with.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I have to ask, have you gotten back with the doctors and that nurse practitioner since you've gotten well?
Yeah, I have because I went back and I still use the doctor to get MRIs to keep a tab on kind of what's going on in my brain and spinal cord. I still take the diagnostic. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? So I still have to go back there. And the interesting thing was when I would go back to their office to get the diagnostics, the MRIs and stuff, I was the only guy walking in their office, the only guy normal that wasn't on any of the drugs. And that was what was weird. And the nurse practitioner, she's taken, you know, reams of notes from me trying to figure out what exactly I was doing to be MS-free on no drugs.
Okay, so what do the MRIs show? I mean, are they showing that you're in remission or that it's gone?
Yeah, the MRIs, just for the listeners, when I was first diagnosed, my brain and spinal cord was covered in about 80% of my brain and spinal cord was covered in scar tissue and active lesions, active attacks going on in both brain and spinal cord. That's why I couldn't walk, and that's why I had, you know, some brain impairments. Just a couple of years ago, my brain and spinal cord showed 20%, but not active lesions, just scar tissue. And you can't fix the scar tissue. That's going to always show, because it's like if you cut your arm, the scar is always going to be there. What has happened miraculously, though, by what I'm going to share with your listeners here a little later, is the rewiring of my nerves, meaning that active scar tissue, there's only about 20% of my brain now versus 80%. It's not active. It's just scar tissue. But I have probably 70 to 80% new neurons and nerves that are in my brain and spinal cord that have created new pathways and new cells and structures in my brain and in my spinal cord. So basically my brain rewired everything around the scar tissues.
And you have new neurons.
Yeah, I obviously they do. I have new neurons and I have one would say, and the doctor would say, if they clearly one doctor actually looked at me and saw my health and what's going on with me and said, you were misdiagnosed.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, yeah, that's very convenient for you to say, right? Mm-hmm. That I was misdiagnosed. And the only reason why they say that is because there is no cure to MS. Mm-hmm. And so they're looking at me that I obviously have a cure. So obviously I didn't have it. is what they have. That's what the only thing they can come back to is that it was misdiagnosed, because that's why I don't have it today.
Okay. Well, even though the test and the MRI showed was,
clearly
that's what it was. What are they saying you had?
The thing about MS is that they don't know what it is. They just know that it's scar tissue on the brain and spinal cord. They don't have a reason for why. And I can talk a little bit about my discoveries and how I got to where I'm today based on what they say causes it.
We want to talk about that, but go ahead.
Yeah. What they say causes it. And so they don't really know. They'll tell you, we don't know what causes it, so that's why there's no cure or whatever. But clearly any doctor who looked at me today would say that I had multiple sclerosis because my brain has scar tissue, and that's what multiple sclerosis means, scar tissue. I have multiple scar tissues on my brain and spinal cord. So clearly yeah. I had it.
It's just 20% instead of 80%.
Yeah.
And it's not active.
It's not active. It's just scars.
So are they saying you basically don't have it now?
Right.
So the doctors are saying you do not have multiple sclerosis.
Right.
When before they were saying you did. Okay. We've got to know. Tell us, what did you do to get yourself well from multiple sclerosis?
We are excited indeed to be celebrating our one-year anniversary here at America Out Loud. And we could not have done it without you. Well, in short order, we've become one of the fastest-growing podcast and talk radio networks in the world. For all the latest news, entertainment, your blogging, and now web TV, as we celebrate our one-year anniversary here, and we'll see you back at AmericaOutLoud.com. Well, there are thousands of nutrition supplements out there, so how do you choose? Well, I believe you choose by the impact it has on your body. For instance, sleeping better at night, having more energy during the day, less anxieties, and just feeling better overall. After taking Healthy Cell for just 3 weeks, it about changed my life. So much that I asked the company for a special deal for you. Instead of $110 plus shipping, you pay just $79.99 for the monthly plan plus free shipping. Just go to HealthyCell.com, use the code OUTLOUD, or click the banner on the homepage of AmericaOutLoud.com. Take it from me, Malcolm Outloud, this is a game changer. HealthyCell.com.
Tell us, what did you do to get yourself well from multiple sclerosis?
Well, part of it is accident, and is the miraculous part that you, when you introduced me, and part of it is systematic. And you know a little bit about kind of, we worked together in the past, kind of the way I work and systematically try to, you know, cover different things to figure out and attack a problem with a solution. For me, when the nurse practitioner said, tell me everything that you discover, I left that office that day with the, I can't take any more of these pharmaceutical drugs or they're going to kill me. So I have to figure out what causes multiple sclerosis.
And that Joey, that is at the heart of misdiagnosedlife.com. That's what I'm about.
Right.
That's what I've tried for 15 years to get doctors to look at my child when we were going through that terrible illness. What's causing it? You know, they kept wanting to put a Band-Aid on it. Well, I went on a research to find the cause, because if you don't know what's causing it, you can't fix it unless accident.
That's right.
Why it's so important to get to the root cause of problems. And to me, Joey, that's not rocket science. I don't understand.
For me, it started with Google. It started me typing in cure for multiple sclerosis. Of course, there is no cure. So, you know, it came up with all kinds of stuff from crackpots to everything you can imagine. And I've done everything from bee venom to snake bites to healers, you know, everything that you could possibly imagine. If somebody said they had a cure, I was there. I was the first in line. I was getting, you know, as many different things. I even did chelation, B12, and I did everything that you could possibly imagine. And once none of that worked, that's when I said, okay, now I've got to get to the root cause, meaning all these symptomatic treaters, all these things that everybody has, the snake oil to this and the snake oil to that, none of that worked. So I said, well, let me figure out what is causing it. And what I discovered was, and where my fingers did the typing on the keyboard to try to figure out, it came up with four or five different things. The first thing was toxicity. Did I have any toxic issues? Did I have heavy metals in my system? Was I exposed to any toxins in my environment? Things like that. That was one angle. So I attacked that angle. Another angle was allergies. Did I have any allergies in my body? Was I wearing the wrong clothes? I even removed the amalgam fillings in my teeth, you know, because it had mercury in it, and, you know, different things in my mouth was allergic to, you know, things. And the interesting thing is, when your body is in a state of poor health, you are allergic to everything. In fact, when I did an allergy test, they did a skin test, a blood test, I was allergic to 180 different things. I was allergic to all kinds of food, from cheese to grains to broccoli to tomatoes. I couldn't eat pizza because I was allergic to every component of a piece of pizza. So I had to, what I did was got rid of all the allergies in my environment. Okay. And that didn't quite fix it either. So I got rid of the allergens. I got rid of the heavy metals in my mouth and did chelation because that was the toxicity. Did I have any toxins? So I got rid of that. I got rid of the toxins. And then there was another thing is, do I have any bacterial infections? So I did some blood-brain barrier bacterial things to try to figure that out. That didn't work. You know, did I have any viruses? Like they say that certain autoimmune disorders are caused by Epstein-Barr virus and chickenpox and different things like that. So I tried to figure out, do I have any of those things? The fourth thing was what really made all the difference. And that was, out of those four things, toxins, allergens, virus, bacteria, the fourth thing, which I got to last, I should have started there first, was stress. Did I have any stress in my environment? Was I doing a stressful job, stressful anything? And in fact, I was on a scale of 1 to 10, a 10 out of stress. In fact, when I was diagnosed on Christmas Eve in 2001, 10 days prior to that, I won the Manager of the Year award at the Christmas party. And I won the Manager of the Year award because I was working 80 hours a week, 85 hours a week, and working my butt off to get that award.
At a job you hated.
Got a job I hated, right? Yeah. I doubled the effort and tripled the efforts on a job I hated and got the award. And then my body said, all right, now you're done. Uh-huh. This ain't going to happen anymore. You're finished. Yeah. And so number four was stress. So I was like, wait a second. What do you mean stress? These other things, my environment, the toxins, things like that, where I thought these were going to work. This stress thing was like, well, I'm going to dig into this one. And this is the one where I dug into. And come to find out, our DNA, you had mentioned to me earlier about the growing giants, I discovered that our DNA increases, gets stronger, fortifies, or weakens and breaks up under stress. So if and how that translated is, that which makes you happy fortifies, and that which makes you unhappy destroys.
That's pretty simple.
Very simple, but like, oh my gosh, like to me, this was so enlightening. This was the aha moment that, so you're telling me that if I do things that makes me happy, I'm going to get better and fortify. And if I get rid of the things that make me unhappy, that I'm not going to destruct any longer. And so I was like, I've got to write a book about this. That's where the Growing Giants thing came about. So what I started doing back in the time, and I still had problems with my hands and my feet, and just doing simple tasks like eating dinner was painful. Multiple sclerosis, since there's damage on the nerves and things like that, it usually triggers pain. So it was very painful. You know what it feels like when you hit your funny bone in your elbow?
Yes.
That's what my body felt like picking up an object. So,
oh my, that had to be terrible.
Yeah, you know how that feels and how that hurts.
Yeah.
But once I figured this out, I said, well, the thing that makes me happy the most is playing the drums. From the time I was a kid and through high school, and I always wanted to be a drummer, and I loved playing the drums, and the drums brought me happiness and joy over anything else in my life. But when I made this decision to start playing the drums again, it was extremely painful. The drums used, I have to use both legs, right, left, my feet, my fingers, my hands, my arms, and my brain, because the drums also, here's what's interesting, is it's left brain and right brain. It works the logical side and the creative side. And this is why I think that it helped to rewire my brain, both physically from my spinal cord to my hands and feet, to both legs, to both arms, and my brain. I started rewiring when I started playing the drums.
So doing what you loved actually directly facilitated repairing and rewiring your body.
Right.
So that was convenient.
That was convenient.
And loving your job is like you said, is extremely, extremely important. And it's really nice when that can do that, directly help your body repair.
That's right. That's right. So intuitively, I started playing the drums, even in the pain, and I just did it every day as a discipline, as a practice. And even through the pain, and a lot of people will know this, something that can bring you pain, you can still have joy with it.
Right.
Meaning, you absolutely can. Even though it hurt, like if I was building something and I hammered a nail on but I loved the building and carpenter work, I will take the pain, you know, by hitting my hand with a hammer and keep going with the work and still be happy with the work. Meaning you can work through the pain as long as it brings you joy and happiness.
Yeah.
And so I worked through the drumming, even though it brought me temporary pain. My bandmates, I joined a band and just so that I kept playing the drums. And after every practice, before and every practice, I had to soak my hands and feet in ice.
Yeah. Now, what year was this? How long after?
This was in 2003.
2000. So 2 years after you were diagnosed.
2 years after I was diagnosed, because it took a year to get on that Copaxone drug, then have the almost kill me, and then to start the journey of trying to figure it out. So it took me from 2001 to probably roughly two and a half years to start playing the drums again.
Yeah. Now, I want to back up just a little bit because you said you mentioned something about growing giants. Now, our audience, a lot of them won't know what you're talking about there. And we talked a little bit before the podcast, and I've talked to you in the past. As a matter of fact, I think growing giants a few years ago is how I first, got to know you. Well, growing giants, and I would love to twist your arm and get you to put that sign back up. Because Growing Giants is basically a site that you answer some questions and it lets you know what you're good at, what you would like, you know, what you love, basically what you need. It gives you a general idea of what you need to be doing. And Joey, you can probably expand on that a little bit more, but it was a phenomenal site. And there were four categories, researcher, mentor.
And I remember the reason why I brought it down. I took it down because I got pressure from the medical community, the doctors, the scientific community, that I was misinforming people.
Oh, really? Well, I took it.
Meaning I'm not a psychologist. So it was a psychology test that I put together.
Okay.
They're like, you're not a psychologist. You're not certified. You're not a medical doctor, this kind of stuff. So I took it down out of fear of getting in trouble for having an assessment that helped you find out what you should be doing in order to keep yourself disease free.
Okay. Well, what you need to do is just go to psychologists and have them look over it and have them put it up. It needs to be back up.
I know. I had a client. I had a client who told me that and said, "Hey, I know some psychologist friends that you could work with to get it back up." And so, rather than go through the pain of that, I just kept drumming.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Kept going.
We need to talk about this after the show today, because I'm telling you, folks, that was a phenomenal site. And it would tell whether you're a researcher, mentor, creator, or
practitioner.
That's right. Practitioner.
Yeah.
And then it gave you examples of some of the things that you could be doing. And it's phenomenal. But anyway, but I guess that's for another day. But anyway, if you could find something, and there are other tests out there, other things that you can do that tell you what you're good at. And this is something that people...
Yeah, Myers-Briggs, DISC test, all these are very helpful tests when they tell you this is your talents, this is what you're good at, this is where you're most natural. That should be a ding, ding, ding. If you're not doing those things, you're doing total opposite things, then that's going to lead to something horrible, not good.
Yeah. And we're not saying it'll lead to MS, but it may lead to something even worse, or it may not be that bad. Who knows? But the point is being happy. This just shows how valuable and how important it is to be truly happy. And everybody knows that when something really, really exciting and good happens and you're really, really happy, you have so much energy and you feel so good. And that's just, that is so true for so many different things. And especially, and imagine if you could be in that state of mind every day by doing what you love to do as your career in your job.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's kind of where I went in my brain was, I've got to get to that stage, meaning I got to get to the stage where my job, my career, the thing that I'm doing to put food on the table or whatever has to be around what is in my passion, what I'm joyful about, what I love to do. Because I know the alternative, meaning I know what happens when I work in an environment where I'm not happy and where I'm not supposed to do that work because it brings me stress and, mental turmoil. People are probably familiar with the anguish that sometimes jobs can cause. That's definitely a clue, to get yourself on the right track.
Now, I wanted to ask too, did you also work on improving your diet too? Or was there anything else that you did?
Yeah. Well, from the chelation to getting rid of the allergens, the allergen part, and it's funny that up to this stage, my most stressful when I had this diagnosis, you probably haven't seen me there, but I was actually 255 pounds.
I can't even imagine that.
And my wife just showed me a picture like the other day. We're moving to another location and she's going through a bunch of stuff and she pulls out a picture when my son was just a baby. And this is when I was at that stage. Now, keep in mind, when you're stressed out and you hate life, I ate, That's how I got joy was eating. That's the best part of my day was lunch.
And so many people can say that. That is true for so many people.
Yeah, the stress actually leads to eating poorly. And so when I was misdiagnosed, when I was diagnosed in 2001, I was 255 pounds. After this, and again, I was lucky I didn't have a heart attack. My heart, I guess, was strong because it survived a couple of attacked there.
Right. Yeah, for sure.
Because of my researching allergens, I was allergic to everything. I literally didn't eat red meat. I couldn't eat cheese. I couldn't eat gluten. I went on this incredibly strict diet. The doctor that I was going to that was an allergen diet said I had to be on this diet for over a year. Literally, I counted from day one to day 365 to retest the allergens, and I went from 245 to 175 in weight.
Wow.
Or 255 to 175, meaning I lost all this weight because, again, my diet was so strict. I could only eat certain proteins, certain vegetables, and I was very, very, very strict on this diet because, again, I was trying to find a cure. I figured that, if there was something associated with an allergy, that we would get rid of it. Now, the interesting thing is once I got rid of all these allergies, I retook the test 365 days later, and I wasn't allergic to anything. Meaning
that is amazing.
Completely left my body, completely were gone. Because my autoimmune was such a heightened spot that made me allergic to everything. I was even allergic to my own nerves. That's why my immune system was attacking my nerves. It was attacking anything I put in my body. It was attacking that, meaning my body was in such disarray that my body couldn't handle just about anything.
So, what autoimmune is...
empty. My cup was full, from that perspective. And once I got rid of all the allergens, my cup was empty.
Yeah. And of course, what an autoimmune is just in case people don't know, especially when the body is attacking itself. So the body was attacking the nerves and it was attacking itself and it didn't like the food. So the body was just basically miserable, wasn't it? It was just didn't know what to do, I guess.
It didn't know what to do. Now, I don't think that the diet had anything to do with why I'm healthy today, only because I eat pizza and I'm not the best when it comes to eating well in today's day and age. I'm still a thin weight. I never got back to where I was because I'm happy. So I don't stress eat.
So when you were on that strict diet, was that year that you were on that diet, was that the year you transitioned to playing the drums?
No.
Okay. So that was before.
Yeah. That was 2002. I didn't start really getting into the drums until 2003.
Okay. So it helped some. And this is a story, you know, your story is similar to our story. You did some of the things we didn't. We've done some of the things, no, that you hadn't. But I'm telling you, folks, when you're desperate, when you're not really getting answers from the medical profession and even alternative medicine, we went to regular doctors and I went to alternative doctors. And we even have worked in energy medicine and beyond. You know, when you're desperate, you're willing to try almost anything.
Yeah.
I mean, I was willing to try anything as long as it would get my daughter well, as long as it didn't hurt her. And I preferred it was legal. Now, we didn't do anything illegal. But, you know, when you're desperate, you do kind of wonder, you know, those things cross your mind. But you just, you know, and, I remember one time I told my daughter, I said, look, she was upset and everything. And I said, look, I said, you know, I will find out. She was young. She was 7 or 8 years old. And I said, I will find out what's wrong with you and you will get well. And I said, if I have to go to the end of the earth to do it, I said, I will. And I have kept my promise to her. And now she's essentially well. She's almost well. We're almost finished with this last thing that we're doing. But it's taken 15 years. 15 years. And I have found answers in places I never, ever dreamed I would be going into. I never knew it really existed so much. Yeah. And that's what happens when you're desperate, folks. And for the people out there that's healthy, and so many times, and I know family and friends mean well, but so many times when they're not in that desperate situation, I mean, when you're desperate and you're basically in a top of hell, you don't care where the answer's found, and you don't care who gives it to you. You just need relief. You just want out. You want help, and you really don't care. And for the people that say, oh, you know, you don't need to do that stuff, no, let me tell you something. You have not been desperate enough. You've not been on your knees begging. You've not been just on the floor crawling, just rolling around crying. And I've done that before, not much. But when you feel like you have been pushed to the point that you just cannot take it anymore, and then you're pushed a little bit more. I mean, people, you don't know what misery is until you've been in a situation like I have been in with my daughter, and like Joey's been in, and like many other people that have been in, and they're not getting answers where you think the answer should be found. So you have to go try to find them yourself.
Why I created Growing Giants to begin with is because I believed that was a key, meaning being happy and finding your joy and doing stuff that you love and getting rid of that fourth thing in all diseases, which is stress. Getting rid of the stress and becoming happy and fortifying your DNA and that kind of thing, that was what worked for me, and I've seen that work for so many people, and that's why I went that route. That's why I decided, well, I'm the guy who's living to tell about it, and I've got to share this message. Yeah. And unfortunately, I went to the MS conventions. I went to different things. I was kicked out. I was ridiculed. My test was torn apart. You know, that's kind of why I switched gears and took it off the market, which really stinks because there's so many people that could be helped by this kind of information.
Yeah.
Just changing one's job could actually make you healthier. You know, it's just a concept that nobody wants you to tell. You know what I mean?
Right. Right.
Because we're attached so much to the medical community, the pharmaceutical community, that kind of thing. So telling people that they can, you know, change their health by changing their lifestyle, that sounds like snake oil to some people.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in reality, it's one of the four factors to all disease is stress.
Stress, yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and doctors and medication, oh, they have their place. I mean, you know, we don't want to bash any area of medicine. And that's not what we're doing. What we're saying is basically sometimes you just have to take your health into your own hands. And I really think everybody should do that. Not that you should leave your doctor, but it's just that so many times people just take the doctor's word for things, and I think that's dangerous. You know, we need to do our own research, and that's a big part of what this podcast and my website's about, is informing people. And sometimes people, if you don't do your research, you don't even know what questions to ask, and that's what happened to us. And you were probably in this situation at first also. But when my daughter started having these odd symptoms, it was like, I don't even know what questions to ask, much less what doctor to take her to, you know. And so it can really be frustrating, and you can feel it can be a very, very lonely place.
Yep.
And
sometimes it's referred to as the dark night of the soul.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had many dark nights where I was just like, I don't know. You know what I mean? Like,
I have too.
Yeah, where you're just like at your wit's end, and you're just like, I am in such darkness and don't know the future, you know, like what to do, where to go, who to ask, that kind of thing. That it's such a terrible place to be.
It is. And I remember at times, one time in particular, I just looked up at the ceiling, and I was just like screaming out to God. I'm like, what am I missing?
Yeah.
Please, just, you know, let me know, because I knew we were missing something. I knew something, we had overlooked something. And, you know, when you're dealing with a child that screams and cries for sometimes 3 hours at a time.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
And having panic attacks and other things. And you don't know. And you know, if you take them to a regular doctor, they're just going to try to give her medicine. And I'm like, look, medicine. And she has been on medicine before, because sometimes you do need that. Sometimes they can get so bad, you have to have medication to stabilize things.
And yeah, like I needed when I had that big attack, I needed the steroid to bring down the inflammation.
That's right. And sometimes you have to have it. That's why I'm not a purist. Some people, you know, some people are on one side or the other. Oh, it's all medicine or nothing, you know. And some people are it's all natural stuff. They never, ever take medicine. I'm not either way. I'm like in between. I'm like, look, sometimes when you can go the natural way, that's great. Do that when you can. But sometimes you have to have medication. You just do.
I'm very much in alignment with you. There's definitely a time and place for it, and it's definitely useful in many, 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 many instances and cases, for sure. Yeah. It's just that when you're covering a symptom and not looking at the root cause,
that's the key, is
finding out what the root cause is. And it could be different. The reason why it's hard to diagnose multiple sclerosis is because your root cause could be one of many factors. In my case, I feel like stress was the catalyst.
Yeah.
Meaning it was the spark to the gasoline. And so, you know, that's kind of what set it off for me. For some people, they could have a toxicity issue, and stress could be the catalyst to blow up. And then they could get another autoimmune, like rheumatoid arthritis. It's the same thing as MS, but instead of attacking the nerves, it attacks the joints.
Right.
Many different autoimmune, I don't know about with your daughter, but many autoimmune, at least adult autoimmune issues, are related to stress, because your body attacks itself and there's a disarray somehow with your immune system.
Yeah.
And I used to teach this in Growing Giants. I like to look at my individual cells, the white blood cells, red blood cells, skin cells, nerve cells, as little smiley faces. Either they're smiling or they're frowning. And a happy body doesn't attack a happy body. Meaning if everybody in the room is happy, they're not going to attack each other. But if they're angry or sad or unhappy, then they could possibly, the littlest thing could set them off. And so I always try to look at my cells and try to envision and try to do stuff that I know makes every cell in my body smile, like a smiley face.
Yeah.
And the more that I sought out a smiling body, the less symptoms I had with MS, and it eventually has gone away.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, how long did it take for pretty much all of your symptoms to go away?
From 2003 is when I embarked on the happiness path. I didn't come out with Growing Giants until 2011. So over that period of time, that was about an 8-year period of time of struggling through, trying to work out my happiness. And of course, I still had different things that I did that brought me unhappiness. I still had to, you know, do some work that didn't bring me the best of joy. But that path from 2003 to 2011 was trying to find that road to happiness, trying to find that path to a happy body. And I discovered, I started doing this yoga right around 2010, where in the yoga, we would always say, happy body, happy mind, happy spirit. You know what I mean? Like that kind of got me in the mindset of, if my body's happy, my mind's happy, my spirit will be happy. You know what I mean? And so everything that I did, is my body happy? Yes. Is my mind happy? Yes. Is my spirit happy? Yes. You know what I mean? So, and that kind of helped me try to get in this alignment. And in 2011, I decided to come out with my DNA findings. That's why I created the assessment. And from 2011, I would say till today, it took all that time. So from 2017, that may date this recording a little bit. That entire time period, symptoms started going away a little along. I didn't have an attack from 2003 till now. So once I started playing the drums, I never got another attack.
Wow, that's amazing. And I think it's important for people to understand, it's never just one thing.
Right.
It's usually
right.
Something that is the straw that breaks the camel's back. You know, it's like stress was yours. For someone else, it may be certain toxin or virus or bacteria or whatever. I think with my daughter, it was a virus that actually triggered it. And what she had was also an autoimmune condition, which is
sometimes it's
new.
A broken bone. Like that's you hear true. People with rheumatoid arthritis, they were in a down state health-wise, stress-wise, but then they had a broken bone that was a catalyst to cause the autoimmune response.
Right, which was a stress to the body. And I noticed with my daughter, stress would always make her worse. But hers was something that's actually was a new, and it's still new, fairly new disorder. It's called PANDAS. It was first named PANDAS. PANDAS, and they changed it to PANS, which is an autoimmune condition, which is basically an infection in the brain. They have an infection in the brain, and the body's attacking the brain instead of so much the infection. And, you know, and back then, you know, they didn't know as much about it. And, you know, and I still to this day, you wouldn't believe how many doctors I've had to explain what that is. They just don't know what it is. That kind of a thing. And so, you know, so we had to deal with all that. And stress, I noticed, would always make her worse.
Yeah.
And again, it's never one thing. So you do need to do several, you know, it's you always need to eat right. That's just common sense. But the exercise and all that type of thing, and just try to reduce your stress level. And of course, it's finding that trigger can be challenging too.
And I can't say that getting rid of the allergens, changing my diet, I can't say that none of those things was a help. I guarantee you they were a part of the healing.
True.
I mean,
absolutely.
They were definitely a help. But what got my body repaired kept it there when I got rid of the stress. Meaning if I would have kept going with the stress, then it probably would have eventually got back to another episode or another attack. So getting rid of the stress was what's kept me in a good spot. But all the work with the getting rid of the toxins, all that kind of stuff, got my body to a cleaner state. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
And then taking away the stress got my body to a healthier mind, healthier spirit state. You know what I mean? That kept me where I needed to be. So that what you're saying is absolutely true. I mean, you've got to take of course your health into your own hands and discover what is that is a catalyst for you. What is that could affect you or is causing your issues, and dig down into it. But also, again, I can't stress this enough, is the stress. Getting rid of the stress can only help. You know what I mean? It can't hurt.
Absolutely.
And for me, it's allowed me to live a healthy lifestyle from this point forward.
Okay. So now, are you having any symptoms of MS now?
I would say no, in that I have a couple of numb spots that's always been there on the soles of my feet and on some parts of my hands. The doctors say that that will probably always be like that because there's permanent scar tissue from those initial attacks.
Yeah.
I've had spots like that actually go away because of rewiring. So I'm experimenting now with those spots of stimulating it, trying to move those spots and seeing if I can't create my own nerve pathways. But I feel like because I didn't use those spots like I use my hands and feet for the drums and things like that, that it never rewired around those scar tissues. So yeah. you could say I still have some symptoms, but those are permanent things that have been there since 2001.
And I would say they were probably minor. Wouldn't you say that? Probably?
Absolutely minor. They're just some numb spot, little teeny numb spots the size of a dime on my feet, like the soles of my feet, and on a couple of spots on my hands. And in fact, it doesn't even bother me because where they're at in my hands and feet actually helps me in my drumming, meaning it doesn't rub. I don't feel any pain in those areas.
Okay. So that's a benefit then in a way.
It is in a way, but you know, to be 100%, you know, with no issues, there's just, again, these little minor numb spots in my hands and feet that like the size of a dime, you know, that are probably from permanent scar tissue on my brain and in my spinal cord. But I really feel like I can rewire it and get it back. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't doubt you can. I mean, you're already a walking miracle as it is. So
I know that's what they say. And the funny thing is they want to say that I was misdiagnosed versus saying you're a miracle. You fixed it. You're fixed. You know what I mean? And that's kind of funny. How that works is that they can't say, no, you fixed it. You cured it. Nobody wants to say there's a cure.
No.
So, yeah.
And I know people are probably wondering this. Now, you said it took several years for you to really get, you know, where you are now a whole lot better. But, and that can be depressing for some people. So I want to ask.
Yep.
From 03, from when you started playing the drums and started turning your ship around, so to speak.
Yeah.
How long did it take for you to get a significant improvement to where you felt a lot better? Not completely where you are now, but you were significantly improved that you could handle it a lot better.
The funny thing is, so I have to equate it to the band.
Okay.
Meaning I have distinct memories about the band and how when I first started with the band, the name of the band was called Saltbox. We started in 2003. And when I first started Saltbox, I had to soak my hands and feet in ice because of the nerves and the pain and that kind of stuff. We were only together for 9 months. The band was only together for 9 months and then it broke up, you know, bands break up kind of thing. In 9 months, the day that we broke up, when we were practicing, I no longer had to put my hands and feet in ice and I no longer had a coordination issues or problems with my hands and my feet. So in 9 months playing the music, the drums, this was kind of the epiphany for me is in 9 months, I would say I had a 60 to 70%, difference in the disease, just over a 9 month period playing the drums.
Yeah. An improvement, 60 to 70% improvement. Yeah.
Right.
That is remarkable. Absolutely remarkable.
And then it was slow changes from that point forward, you know what I mean? To get me kind of to 99% today. So, but that first initial, I'm going to play the drums and I'm going to, you know, get in this joy of playing the drums and that kind of thing. I would say my body like was on a rapid healing pattern for about 9 months.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic. Okay. Well, Joey, what advice would you give people who are working at a job they hate or, you know, and they're having a lot of stressful problems at home and work? What advice would you give them? Where do they start?
That's a great question. And kind of when people ask me that question all the time, there's a couple of things that I would do. Number one is find self-meditation. For me, it was drums. But meditation also works, meaning you've got to get rid of the stress, even if you have to have a stressful job. I would say try to figure out a replacement, but if you can't figure out a replacement, at least find a retreat in yourself, whether that's you love to garden, you love to crochet, you love to paint. Find that hobby, that thing that brings you joy, and use that as a temporary retreat for your stress while you're finding, take the DISC test, take the Myers-Briggs, take a test and figure out where you should be. Meaning if your job is providing a ton of stress for you, in my mind, there's no question you've got to find a new one. You've got to figure out a way of getting to a new, because that's kind of the majority of our life is our jobs.
It is.
So we have to find, you have to find a new one, but temporarily, because I still had these stressful things, but it was the drums that actually helped me retreat from those things and find joy and passion and heal my body as if I was going to a retreat every night when I went to brand practice.
Yeah, so they should do this every day. It's like an escape.
Every day, like a meditation, even if it's a prayer thing, a meditation thing, something that, you know, painting is a meditation. They call it Zen. You know, the Japanese have something called Zen. That's pruning a bonsai or painting a picture or finding art or, you know, engaging in what I call your personal retreat. Find out what brings you joy, even if that's watching funny movies. You know, do it at least an hour a day. I know somebody who cured their cancer because they watched comedy 2 and 3 hours a day. They got rid of all the negative stuff, and all they did was watch funny movies because that's what they loved. And
yeah, those that funny was Norman Cousins, wasn't it?
What's that?
Norman Cousins. He wrote a book on that. But doing something to escape and doing something fun. So we are telling people to do, we're telling you to do what's fun. Do something fun
right.
Every day, even if it's just a few minutes.
Yep.
Just do something that's fun or do something that meditate, somehow something that you can do to escape. So just give your body a relief, some relief, so that it can help those cells get happy. And that's what we want, happy cells.
That's right.
Okay. Well, thank you, Joy, for coming on the show and sharing your story. Again, it's been really inspiring for me and others.
It's
and
a pleasure.
I know people will love hearing your story. And also, I want you to tell us a little bit about, in about 30 seconds, about you also help people in business, and this may be helpful to people so that they can help find their happy place a little quicker. You have a product that you have developed. It's called Position for Profits, and it's called, your website is positionforprofit.com. Tell us briefly about that and how that can help people, you know, maybe, you know, get into a better place business-wise and to be a little more successful in their business.
Yeah. And one of the things that, again, be quick is I help people figure out what that thing is, that happy thing is, and help them create a business around it so that they can do that. You know, there's no reason to work for somebody else because you're working for somebody else's dream, probably.
Right.
So figure out what your dream is. I help people figure out their dream and then help them create business processes around it so that they can be successful in business. The product that I'm releasing or should be released at the time is called Positioning for Profit. And that's basically taking it. It walks you through a step of figuring out who you are, figuring out who your customer is, figuring out the market, and figuring out how do you take your product, your service, even if that's yourself, and position it for success in the marketplace so that you can make money and, you know, be happy and healthy in that. And that's basically what I'm doing with that particular product. If you're interested in that, that's positioningforprofit.com/bev, B-E-V.
Okay, and, yes, I'm going to help you promote this because I think it's very, very important that people find their passion.
Exactly.
And then not only that, but know how to sell it and have a business around it and make a living doing it.
That's right.
Okay. Well, thank you so much again, Joey. And thank you for listening. This is Beverly Butler, and you've been listening to the Misdiagnosed Life podcast and talk radio on the America Out Loud Network.